Vishnupad Paraman Saparibhajapachara Dosta Tara Sata Sisi Man, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi Ki This confounded Tara Sata Srila Prabhupada Ki Premsi Kaho Si Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adoita Gadadha Shivasani Go Bhaktivindi Ki Sisi Radha Krishna Gopinath, Saimakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Sri Navadip Mayapur Dham Ki Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Yamuna Mayi Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Tulsi Devi Ki Samaveda Bhakti Vindi Ki All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the Sisi Guru Nuranga Hanitai Ko Primananda Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Dharmarādiva sakshayam Ascharye himavaniva Kuvera iva chodhyo Chkoshadhyo
Kuvera iva chodhyo
Kutarto vruno yata Dharmarad. Actually, if you look at the four lines, they're very clear in the English meaning, because they're all describing the qualities of Prithumaraj. And from now until the end of the chapter, we'll hear about the qualities of Prithumaraj as a king. And they're quite wonderful. In the previous verse, described, actually since text 55, it's been describing the qualities of this personality who was empowered by Krishna to be king. So this is Krishna basically explaining the ideal qualities of a ruler, and Prithumaraj actually carried them out. So I'll just read the, because it was a while since these verses have been read. I'll read the qualities of Prithumaraj before the ones we'll read now. Since Prithumaraj was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wanted to protect the Lord's creation by pleasing the various citizens according to their various desires. Did anyone hear that? Even that, the first sentence of the 55th text is just so important. But if I start going over it now, we'll never ever get to the 59th text. But I can't resist a little bit. He was a perfect first quality. He was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, why is that important? It's because we're going to hear about his qualities, but the foundation, essential quality that he had was that he was a devotee. And because he was a devotee, then these other qualities naturally manifest in him. Because the other qualities aren't, that we'll hear, they're not exactly devotion. Because devotion is described as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Anmanam, Bhavamam, Bhakto, things like that. But these qualities are basically qualities that are good within a, in this case, within a perfect king. And they are born out of ultimately his devotion. But you can have these qualities but without having devotion. But if you have these qualities without having devotion, they'll be incomplete. And on the other side, if you actually become a devotee, actually a devotee, and we'll talk about this Krishna willing a little bit later, naturally, these very wonderful qualities, endearing qualities, come out of a person. So he was a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he wanted to protect the Lord's creation because that was his duty. It was his service. His actual service was to protect the Lord's creation as the king. That was his service. And the rest of the qualities were manifest because that was his service. Boys, if you sit up front, you have to be very attentive. If you want to play around a little bit, it's not a problem, but you have to sit further in the back, okay? What's your name? Excuse me? Hari Dev. Do you know who Hari Dev is? Who is Hari Dev? Yeah, very nice. Do you know where the Hari Dev deity is? In Vrindavan. Did you know that? And you know where in Vrindavan the Hari Dev deity is? It's at Govardhan. Did you know that? Govardhan Hill. And you know what part of Govardhan the Hari Dev deity is? It's by the Manasi Ganga. Just by Govardhan. Raise your hand if you've ever seen Hari Dev there. Yeah. So wonderful. All the rest of you should leave class immediately and go. Wait a second. After class, I suggest. Otherwise, I'd just be here talking to myself. Well, no, anyway, you can go if you want to. We'll talk to the deities. So, he would protect the citizens. He would protect the various citizens, amazingly, according to their desires. And therefore, Prithumaraj used to please them in all respects. He would please the citizens. He wasn't considering himself the Lord, even though he was the Lord of the citizens. He was the king, he was the ruler. But he was thinking of the citizens as his praja, or his own children. And he wanted to naturally please them. And the purpose of his doing that, and in the realm what he was doing is so that they would spiritually advance, because this is naturally what the king wants for his beloved citizens, for them to fulfill the purpose of their lives. Because nowadays no one has any idea that life even has a purpose. What to speak of a spiritual, transcendental purpose. No one really considers these things. I mean, not no one, but it's very rare that a person actually considers the transcendental spiritual purpose of life and then dedicates his life to achieving that. And then, and what to speak of the government ruling in such a way that the material desires of the citizens would be fulfilled, but also in such a way that they would make spiritual progress. You know, one time Srila Prabhupada was going to India from New Zealand. He had visited the New Zealand temple, and he was with a devotee whose name was Tusta Krishna. And, well, Tusta Krishna was with Srila Prabhupada, rather. And the plane stopped in Thailand, and at that time Thailand was poor. And Prabhupada actually said, here they're too poor to become Krishna conscious. Because when one is in great, great poverty, if one is in poverty, what is one going to be thinking all the time? How to acquire wealth, and then how to acquire wealth. So if one's, it's so much easier to take the spiritual life if one has at least the basic necessities of life that aren't such a struggle to get. And actually, it's statistically proved, by the way, that after the basic necessities of life are met, then by the amount of wealth you have, it doesn't incrementally increase your happiness. But if you don't have enough, then it's very difficult, unless you're exalted spiritually. It's hard to be happy, you need that. But then once that's there, it's not like more and more and more makes our happiness meter go higher and higher and higher. So how did he please them? By his words. He would speak in a wonderful way to them. By his mentality, because behind the words are the mentality. His works, and not just I'm thinking nicely about you and I'm speaking nicely, but he would work in such a way that the people would be satisfied. And he was the controller and the ruler, and he was gentle. His gentle behavior satisfied. What is a person called, a man called, if he's gentle?
Gentleman.
Thank you. Gentleman. And Prabhupada once said that someone asked Prabhupada, how will you recognize my disciples? How will we be able to recognize your disciples? And he replied, as perfect gentlemen, and of course gentle ladies too. As gentlemen. Gentility. Raise your hand as you answer this question. What does it mean to be gentle? In a simple way. We probably all have different meanings in our mind. What's your name? Excuse me? Varshan? Wow. Thank you. Very nice. Yes.
To be considerate of others' needs.
Considerate of others' needs. Thank you. Very nice. Yes.
Kind and loving.
Kind and loving. Yes.
Do not be rough with anyone.
Yes. Do not be rough. That's vyatirik. That is definition by negation. By saying what you shouldn't have or be. Thank you. Any of the ladies like to?
Poised.
What do you mean by that?
Carry themselves with a lot of pride, but humbleness at the same time.
Thank you. I was thinking well-behaved. That's just what I was thinking, just in a simple way, but I think your definitions were better than mine. So he had gentle behavior. How wonderful. Now, we won't go into a criticism of the modern leaders, because these are the behaviors that satisfy the citizens. And in fact, the citizens, they love their leader, their king, because of these qualities. So the next verse, he was celebrated as Somaraj, the king of the moon. He was as powerful and exacting, just like the sun god. He knew how to act in every circumstance. So he wasn't just gentle if there was a thief or a murderer. He wasn't gentle with him, but he was very strong and powerful and strict. And he was like the sun god, who distributes heat and light, and at the same time exacts all the planetary waters. So that means He exacted the taxes from the citizens by which the kingdom could rule. He was strong. He was powerful. And no one could disobey his orders. So the kingdom was very orderly. He was a strong ruler. No one could disobey his orders any more than one could conquer fire itself. He was so strong that he was compared to Indra, the king of heaven, whose power is insuperable, means unsurpassable. On the other hand, Maharajaprita was also as tolerant as the earth. And in fulfilling various desires of human society, he was like heaven itself. And just as rainfall satisfies everyone's desires, Maharajaprita used to satisfy everyone by how he dealt. I've heard that there is one place, old city or town in one Indian city or town, that where there used to be a king, and the king had in his court, the dabar, he would have a bell, and he would have the bell was on a rope, and the rope went to the center of the city. And anyone who had a problem or a difficulty at any time could go and pull the rope, and it would ring the bell in the king's court, and someone would immediately tend to whatever problem they had, or the king himself if it was required. And there's one purport in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam where about Maharaj Chitraketu, when Angira Muni came to see him, and Prabhupada, in his purports there, he gives an explanation of what a good ruler is, and he explains that the ministers there, and he explains clearly that the king was not a dictator. He was not a dictator. And in Kali Yuga, the kings lost their good qualities. This is described in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. They don't have these kind of qualities, and therefore they become cruel. Rather than being gentle, they become cruel. And therefore, democracy comes up where the people feel that they need to protect themselves from the king, practically speaking, rather than having the king protect them. Mahatmaji, Hare Krishna. Where will you sit?
Yeah.
Huh?
My daughter will sit.
Your daughter will?
Sit.
Yes, no, I said, where will you sit?
Yeah.
So many gentlemen, devotees, are offering you their seats.
Sorry, I heard wrong.
Huh?
I heard wrong.
That's okay.
Rajan Prabhu, Mahatma Prabhu's daughter left her body just very recently.
Really? Oh, I was thinking the other Mahatmas, so many Mahatmas. Yes, I know that, I'm aware of that. Actually, and she had a very strong heart and a very wonderful parents too. But we'll have to continue here. He used to satisfy everyone. He was like this, rather than rather than exploiting people, his mood, his intention was to satisfy everyone. Because he knew by ruling in that way, he would perform his service because he was a devotee. He would be able to serve the Supreme Lord because this is part of the service. To make sure that the citizens are satisfied. He was like the sun, and that no one could understand He was like the sea, and that no one could understand his depths, the depths of his thought. He was a very deep thinker, too, in every level. And he was like Meru, the king of Mount Hills, in the fixity of his purpose. So that was the last verse, and today We're reading, now we'll read the verse today, so we have the mood of what's going on. And tomorrow, Krishna willing, I would like to give you an overview of the pastimes of Preetam Raj, and it puts his qualities in perspective. And it also it gets to the essence of what the Bhagavatam is doing in the fourth canto. And of course, it's wonderful. So, Dharmarad, Eva, Shikshayam, that means that in education, intelligence and education, he was like Dharmaraj, the Lord of Death. So that's, it's so interesting the way the thought goes in this, is that, and Prabhupada will explain this in his purport, that Dharmaraj, the Lord of Death, who everyone must stand before Dharmaraj after one passes from this world, not exactly the devotees though, but and then answer for his acts, for everything one has done in one's life. Now, that's frightening. But Dharmaraj was so exacting in his discrimination. It was completely fair and just. His intelligence was so sharp. So he is compared to Maharaj Prithu. Maharaj Prithu is compared to him. That the exact right judgment about what is the appropriate reaction for what this person has done was given. So, Dharmarad eva shikshayam, that in his intelligence and his shiksha, the education he got, he was just like Dharmaraj. He knew exactly how to discriminate between what should be done and what should not be done. And then, ascharye himavani va, in his opulence, ascharya, in his aishwarya, in his opulence, he was as rich and wealthy as the Himalayan mountains, which means that there are so many, there's so much gold and jewels there. In the mountains, there's so much gold. Did you know that? I know one devotee who used to go to in New Zealand. I won't tell you who he was or where he used to go, but he knew how to find gold in the mountains in New Zealand. And he showed me so much gold. I could exaggerate. It was this big, one of the pieces that he found. And then everyone would leave the class and go to New Zealand immediately. Really? It's still there. So the mountains, especially the Himalayan mountains, there's so much wealth there. And then, Kuvera eva koshadyo, in the matter of possessing wealth, he was just like Kuvera. And Guptarto Vurunayata, in the depths. In the depths, no one, just like one can't understand the Varuna or the depths of the ocean, exactly what's going on. We can understand the surface of the ocean, but the ocean is so deep that one cannot understand what is going on there. So similarly, Maharaj Prithu was so deep in his thinking, no one could really understand exactly how he was thinking and what he was discriminating. What quality of Krishna is that? Does anyone know the English of that? The very deep thought that no one can understand how he's thinking. Krishna also has that quality.
Grave?
Yes, grave. Very, very deep of thought. So here's the English. I took away your ability to say the word by words with me by my explanation, but please forgive me for that. But here's the translation. Maharaj Prithu's intelligence and education were exactly like that of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. His opulence was comparable to the Himalayan mountains, where all valuable jewels and metals are stocked. He possessed great riches like Kuvera, the treasure of the heavenly planets, and no one could reveal his secrets, for they were like the demigods Varunas. Please repeat after me. Maharaj Prithu's intelligence and education were exactly like that of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. His opulence was comparable to the Himalayan mountains, where all valuable jewels and metals were stocked. He possessed great riches like Kuvera, the treasurer of the heavenly planets. And no one could reveal his secrets, for they were like the demigod Varunas. Okay, now without looking at your mobile phones, does anyone remember anything about the verse? Raise your hand. Very difficult question, yes? This is Kali Yuga after all. Raise your hands if you remember something of the verse. Yes?
He was intelligent.
He was intelligent. Anyone remember a little more about his intelligence? Yes? Yes? Yes, you raised your hand. Wait, we have to. Any more about his intelligence? Who is his intelligence compared to? There's only one more question more difficult than this. Is that, does anyone remember anything from yesterday's class? He was as intelligent as Yamaraj. Yes. Yes. Anyone remember anything else? Yes.
He was very wealthy.
He was very wealthy, yes. He had unlimited wealth. Yes. Yes. Hare Deva Prabhu. Excuse me?
He knew where to find the gold.
Yes, he knew where to find the gold because he had in the Himalayan mountains. Thank you. You already know the answers. Okay.
Riches were compared to the Himalayan mountains.
In what way? In what way was he like the Himalayan mountains? In his opulence. And Prabhupada will explain. Yes, okay, last, and then we shall read Prabhupada's purport.
No one could reveal his secrets.
Yeah, what does that mean? No one could reveal his secrets. What does that mean?
He was grave.
What? You didn't raise your hand. He's grave. But what does it mean no one could reveal his secrets? Why couldn't anyone reveal his secrets?
He was at such a level that everyone was below him.
Everyone was?
Below him.
Below him. Because they couldn't understand his secrets. Because of his gravity, because of his depth. Therefore, you can't reveal someone's secrets. If you don't understand them, you can't reveal what's in someone's mind unless that person reveals it to you, or you're expert in understanding the way other people think. So Maharaj Prithu had these qualities. Now, I'm going to read the purport. It's not a long purport and explain some of these qualities, but I may just ask the question, does anyone remember anything from the purport? So please listen carefully. Ready? Yamaraj, or Dharmaraj, as the superintendent of death, has to judge the criminal living entities who have committed sinful activities throughout their lives. Consequently, Yamaraj is expected to be most expert in judicial matters. So that's the first quality, and that's Prabhupada's explanation of Yamaraj and how Maharaj Prithu had the quality of Yamaraj, because it's because if you ask
if you ask, someone does something wrong, and when you ask someone, why did you do that wrong thing, they always tell you a perfectly logical reason why they did the wrong thing. Have you noticed that? And in fact, there's a little story that I once heard that illustrates it, except there's Hare Krishna. You're feeling okay? You okay? Not sick? You're feeling okay? You're happy today? Good. Who looks most beautiful of the deities? You look at the deities and later you can tell me who you think is most beautiful. Okay? So, it's a very instructive little story. That one time there was a sadhu who he realized it was going to be near his time of death. And he was talking to his disciples. And he said, when I go before Yamaraj, of course devotees actually don't go before Yamaraj, which is shown in which pastime? Which pastime? Ajumiya. So he said, when Yamaraj calls me before him and he types my name on his database, presses the enter button, and my whole record comes up, and he will say to me, you did this and this and this and this, didn't you? And then I will say, yes, I did do that, but here's why I did it. This happened to me and I had to do it. What else could I do? And then he would go to the second one. You did this and this and this, didn't you? Yes, I did do it, but here's the reason I did it. I had to do it. What else could I do? So one by one, he went through his whole life. And he said, and he had a perfectly logical reason for every wrong thing that he did. And then finally, he said to him, why were you so proud in your life? This is what the sadhu was saying. And then his answer said, and when he asked me that question, I will be able to give no reply. I like that. For every other thing that we do improper, every bad quality we have, we can have reasons for. But that one, we know better than anyone else why we should have no pride. And for that, we have no excuse. And the opposite of pride is what? Raise your hand. You have to raise your hand, though. What is the opposite of pride?
Humility.
Okay. And there's not even enough corners in the room to put everyone in. But yeah, humility. It's humility is such an interesting quality. And in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says that to the actual depth that one is humble, one can have love of Krishna, priti and danya. That humility, he actually says, danya, he says, is the same as priti or love for Krishna. Now think about that. And yet, in this world, it's so difficult to be humble. And it's so easy to be proud, even though there's no reason to be proud. Why is it that it's so easy to be proud? Think about this, and then why? Yes.
Because we are infinitesimal.
Yes, but that explains more why it's easy to be humble. But why is it that it's so difficult to be humble, even though we are infinitesimal? Yes.
Ourselves?
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Because the center of our life is ourself, but not our real self. but our false self. And that's really the reason. It is false ego. Ahankara, vimudhama, bewildered by false ego, we become proud and we think ourselves central in existence. We are living by the grace of Krishna. By the grace of God, we are alive, and everything that we are proud of is a gift, in fact. And Prabhupada even once said, an old man cannot be proud. And what did he mean by that? Is that, I could tell you, although I'm defying that rule, but still, I can understand exactly what he meant. He meant that in our life, we have so many things that we're proud of in our life. We have so many abilities. We can run. We can jump. I always bring up this example. We have hair when we're young. We may have hair when we're young. We have all our teeth, and our intelligence is sharp. But one by one, we lose everything. All our abilities, as we become older, we lose them, and still we are there. We still exist, but all the things that we are proud of, we lose. We lose them. That means they are not us, in fact. And then, when one is elderly, one tends to become very, very sad because of that. One sees all the younger people, they're doing this, and they're attractive, and this one's that, and you can't partake of any of it. And not only that, worse still, no one cares. No one cares. And if you go to any of the malls today, and I happened to visit one yesterday, everything is geared to the younger people. Everything, the whole world is geared to the youth. And the elderly people, many of whom have wisdom, no one will listen to them. And that's one of the elements of culture, in fact. It's that the elderly people, they've lived life already. They live their life. And especially in a spiritual culture, they've lived their life practicing, and they have wisdom. And therefore, you can gain so much without having to learn everything by experiencing it yourself, by making every mistake. But the culture doesn't teach that. The contemporary society doesn't teach the wisdom that the elders, and the culture is passed on to the youth by the elders. So it's actually a very unfortunate and dangerous situation for the world because of this, especially. Nowadays you look at such a wise place like India. That's traditionally so full of wisdom, and the young people who are all day long like that, and they look at the elderly, and they think they don't even know how to use a mobile phone. They don't even have an FB account. I mean, what could I possibly learn from them? They don't think exactly like that, and they learn in school about evolution, and what does evolution mean? It means that humanity is improving, 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 and everything is getting better and better and better. So, and we're advancing. So, who's more advanced, you or your parents or your grandparents? And tell me, teenagers don't think like that. So it's an unfortunate state. But Prithu Maharaj, he was so wise. He was so wise and deep. So he was Yamaraj is expected to be most expert in judicial matters. Next quality. Prithu Maharaj was also highly learned and exceedingly exact in delivering his judgment upon the citizens. So that's about Yamaraj. No one could excel him in opulence any more than estimate the stock of minerals and jewels in the Himalaya mountains. Therefore, he, Prithumraj, is compared to Kuvera, the treasurer of the heavenly planets. So he was so wealthy. Nor could anyone discover the secrets of his life any more than learn the secrets of Varuna, the demigod presiding over the water, the night, and the western sky. Varuna is omniscient. What does omniscient mean, boys? Omniscient. Yes?
A thing you want to accomplish.
Say again, please. Yes. All knowing. He's got it. It means he knows everything. What does omniscient mean? He knows everything. I agree, but what does omniscient mean? Yes, what does omniscient mean? Yes. You know what? That means he knows everything. Krishna knows everything. He knows what you're thinking right now. Do you know that? That Krishna knows everything. He's omniscient. What does omniscient mean? Yes, thank you. What does omniscient mean? And you? What does omniscient mean? Yeah? Very good. So if someone says to you, what did you learn in class today? At least you can have one thing to say. I know what omniscient means. Krishna, just think of what that means, though. Think about that deeply. Omniscient means you know everything. Krishna knows everything. Is that a reassuring thought or a frightening thought for you? He knows everything, but also he's so kind. And that's something that one has to understand about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not only omniscient and knowing everything, he's all kind and all compassionate and all powerful. So one conclusion, if we understand the qualities of Krishna, and it's important to study the qualities of Krishna, and it's important to develop faith in the qualities of Krishna by the process of even by Shastra and by the process of experience. That Krishna is actually there and he's kind. He knows everything. Not only does he know all the naughty things that we do, but he also knows the sincerity in our heart. And he's Bhava Grahi Janardana. He sees the good. He sees the good, the sincerity. And he never forgets that. And as we mentioned Ajamil before, just see the example of Ajamil. That Ajamil was calling for his son whose name was Narayana. But he was calling his son, and Krishna, Lord Narayan, was thinking, oh, my devotee, Nama Viharana, Natatas Vishayamati, that my devotee, he's calling his son, and Lord Narayan is thinking, my devotee is calling me. It's my duty to give him protection. It's important to meditate on the qualities that we hear in the Bhagavatam. It's important to think about them deeply, and important to let these things affect our lives. Because everyone in life, just the very nature of life, finds themselves in difficulty at one time or another. What to speak of at the very last moments of one's life, which is which must be terrifying, because everything that we've depended upon, our body and our mind, is disturbed. And there's so much pain. And Prabhupada has many times mentioned that it's not like you can think, oh, I'll do whatever I want in my life and then think of Krishna at the last moment. It doesn't work like that. I've seen it. It's very, very difficult. One very dear God brother of mine, I was with him before he left earlier, last year. And one day he just turned to me a few days before he left and says, you can't understand how difficult this is. And you think you're going to just think about Krishna? Even if you want to, it's so difficult. And then you have to be turned over all the time. And he had such a strong desire to hear about Krishna. He just wanted to hear about Krishna, but it was so difficult because the demands of the body are so great. But Krishna is so kind with this devotee, who he was a university friend of mine, so we go back so long, His Holiness Gunakari Maharaj. It was the most amazing thing, because he was in so much difficulty and there was so much pain and there was kirtan going on in Vrindavan. He was in Vrindavan. That's what a blessing that was. He was in Vrindavan. And then actually a miracle took place. I wasn't planning on speaking about this particularly, but it's come up. But he was in Vrindavan, and he was surrounded by devotees and chanting, but his pain was so great that the doctor had to give him so much painkiller that he went into a coma. And I don't know if anyone ever seen people like this. His eyes went back and his mouth went open. And there was so much pain that there was no choice, practically speaking. And then he was surrounded by devotees, and we were all chanting, and His Holiness Bhaktivrinda Govindamaraj was so close to him. I was holding his hand, one hand, another devotee was holding his other hand, and he was in a coma. And Govindamaraj was chanting in his ear loudly, and he began chanting from a position of coma. Everyone could see it. And nowadays, it's one of the weirdest things about nowadays is that everything is a media event. So there were people holding their mobile phones and broadcasting this all over the world. But it was wonderful, in the sense that the whole world was witnessing that his as he was chanting and his mouth was moving. And I could say it was, and the doctor thought, this is impossible. But for Krishna, nothing is impossible. Because Krishna saw that this great soul had served Prabhupada and spread Krishna's, and served Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And wanted, his intention was to hear about Krishna. And Krishna took such care of him out of his kindness. He saw that good, and he gave him that ability, such a gift, to be able to chant Krishna's names, even though it was impossible at the end of his life. And I witnessed it personally. We all witnessed it personally. And due to miracles of technology, the whole world, thousands and thousands of people all over the world were witnessing this. And then we began a kirtan after Maharaj left. And then it felt like the spiritual world had opened up. completely. So this is Krishna's kindness. And would you like to be an instrument of Krishna's kindness? As Prithu Maharaj was an instrument of Krishna, that means to be a servant of Krishna. It is the greatest fortune to be able to do some service to Krishna, because you can serve so many people. But you yourself, oneself, get so much benefit. This is the natural position of a soul. Mama eva angsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. The natural position of a soul is that we are meant to serve Krishna. And living as we are meant in our natural position is the way to get satisfaction in our heart. And otherwise, we will search all over the universe looking for satisfaction, Brahmanda Brahmate. We will wander all over the universe looking for satisfaction. We will be frustrated sometimes, have our desires filled at other times. We will make friends, we will make enemies. This is described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the great banyan tree of material existence. But we will never find satisfaction any more than a fish can find satisfaction when he's out of water. For us, for every living entity, for every soul, satisfaction means being engaged in the service of Krishna, but not just with our bodies, but also with our full heart. That Krishna, let me do this for your pleasure because you are so wonderful. Radha Balabha, you are so wonderful. And the door is open for everyone at any time. It doesn't have to be a big offering. It can be any offering. The offering of the holy names to Krishna, singing for his pleasure, to sweep the floor of the temple for Krishna's pleasure, to offer a patram pushpam palam tam yomam bhakti prayer. If it's done with bhakti, asnami, Krishna says, I will accept it, I will take it. So Srila Prabhupada used to quote his Guru Maharaj saying that there is only one lakh in this world, and by lakh I don't mean 100,000 rupees. There is only one lakh in this world. There is only one thing that's really missing, and that is Krishna consciousness. That is the only really missing thing. And in that, we will find ourselves in so many situations in our life, and we'll have so many reasons why we can't really do it right now. But if we have that strong intention, that strong desire, and really try our best to serve Krishna, whatever our circumstances, Krishna will take such care of us. He promises that. What to speak of, if whatever success we get in Krishna consciousness, ability to serve, this is our real wealth, this is our fortune. And Krishna's, because he's omniscient. What does omniscient mean? What does omniscient mean? Very good. You all did very well on your examination. What does omniscient mean? Gopal? Yes. Because Krishna's omniscient. He not only sees all the naughty things that you do, but he also sees the good things that you do. So please try to maximize all the good things you do and minimize all the naughty things you do. And in fact, if we could live our life just chanting Hare Krishna and serving, sincerely trying our best to serve, then those naughty things will not actually even exist, practically speaking. What a worthwhile attempt in life. Varuna is omniscient by the grace of Krishna, and since he punishes sins, he is prayed to for forgiveness. What to speak of this, he whom Varuna gets power from. He also is the sender of disease. He punishes sins. He's the sender of disease and is often associated with Mitra and Indra. So I would just like to say something about Varuna. Would you like to hear something about Varuna? One little. Would you like to hear something about Varuna? Yeah, are you sure? You know, this pastime is described because one of the elements of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, one of the elements of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is that the devatas all speak from Varuna to Indra to Brahma to Lord Shiva and Mahavishnu, who's not a devata, the Supreme Lord. They all glorify Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after Govardhan Puja day, and after Indra, they've lifted, he caused so much calamity in Braj. Just imagine what mentality has in this. Just imagine his mentality that he wanted to kill all the residents of Vrindavan. Kill all the residents of Vrindavan. Why? Raise your hand. Why? Yes. Krishna took his sacrifice, and that was an insult to him. And what was the cause of? So sometimes I think that was a very extreme reaction. After all, he's got thousands of sacrifices going on all over the world, and just because of one sacrifice in Vrindavan, he missed out on. So what? And then I was thinking, what could possibly have caused this extreme reaction from Indra? And you must be omniscient. No. Yes. I mean, no. No. Yes. You're not omniscient, but that's wonderful. Yes. Pride. And you think. Then naturally, you think, well, Indra was so proud. And then, guess who else is also proud? Or raise your hand if you don't have any pride. Is anyone so proud to think that they don't have any pride? No one will raise their hand. Of course. But when you're proud, if someone insults you, one becomes angry. And when one is angry, one is actually capable of any terrible thing. Have you noticed that? Do you sometimes get angry? Yeah? Do you sometimes get angry? You? Gopal, do you get angry? Gopal, when was the last time you got angry? No, you can tell me later. But anger, pride and anger. So one by one, the devatas all submit themselves to Krishna. So right after Govardhan Puja, not Govardhan Puja, but after the great cataclysm where Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill with his little finger on his left hand. It was so effortless. And actually the reason, I think Kavi Kanapur explains that the reason why he held it in the little finger of his left hand, this big hill, is because his mother was saying, oh, it must be so difficult for you. This is because you haven't even eaten. Let me feed you. Yashoda Maya was saying that. And Krishna said, no. Because of the sacrifice, because of the yajna, Govardhan has made himself so light that he's just floating in the air, practically speaking. Look, I have him on the little finger of my left hand. It's no effort. Don't worry, Mother. Don't worry. So, after the great cataclysm was over, and after Indradev had apologized to Krishna and offered his prayers to Krishna, then it was the Ekadasi. And before breaking the Ekadasi on the Dwadasi on the next day, then Nanda Maharaj went with his friends to the Yamuna River. Raise your hand if you've ever been to Nanda Ghat in Vrindavan. Yes. It's a wonderful place. You've been there? Chinandaga. So Nanda Maharaj went in to bathe in the Yamuna River before breaking the Ekadasi. And according to the calculations of one of the servants of Varunadev, he had bathed in an improper time. So he went into the water. Just everything can be seen from so many different points of view. So just imagine what it looked like from the point of view of his the cowherd men who were watching their beloved Nanda Maharaj go into the water. That he went into the water to bathe, and then the Varunadutta, the servant, messenger of Varunadev, took him to Varuna because he thought he had done something wrong. So from the point of view of his friends, the gopas, what did it look like? What did it look like? It looked like he drowned. He was in the water, and suddenly he went under. And Nanda Maharaj was so beloved by everyone. Everyone loved Nanda Maharaj. In fact, that's why Upananda, his elder brother, gave him the position as king. And he became the minister, Upananda. He was near to Nanda. Because everyone loved Nanda Maharaj because he was so lovable and such good qualities. So it looked to all the gopas who were with Nanda Maharaj that Nanda Maharaj had drowned. And what do you think they did? Immediately, when in difficulty, when you're in difficulty, well, anyway, this is what they did. Yes, what did they do?
They tried solution?
They didn't. Going under, they couldn't. They called out to Krishna. They called out Krishna, 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 Krishna. Because we call out to Krishna when there's difficulty. We take shelter of Krishna when there's difficulty. Why? Because even though it seems like Krishna may not be near by, he's not only, he's omniscient, which means he knows everything. So he knows that there's difficulty. And not only is he omniscient, he knows everything, he's also omnipresent, which means that he is everywhere. So Krishna, even though he was far away, you knew that word, omnipresent? Means everywhere, present, everywhere. Omni means all over. You know what omnipresent means? So Krishna's present everywhere, and he knows everything. He's omniscient and omnipresent. And he's also omnipotent, means he has all power. So they called out, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Rakshamam, Pahimam, protect us, protect us. And Krishna immediately came. And he was going to go in the water. And when Krishna was going into the water, what was it going to look like? He was going to the water to save Nanda Maharaj. And what would it look like from the outside? What would it look like if you were watching? Nanda Maharaj went into the water and disappeared, and then what would it look like?
Like Krishna
had also drowned. So before Krishna went in to the water, he said to Balaram that when Mother Yashoda comes, you assure her that everything's going to be alright. Because he knew that if Mother Yashoda heard that Krishna, Nanda Maharaj and Krishna had gone into the water and they weren't there, that she wouldn't be able to stay alive. And Balaram, everyone trusted. Because when Krishna was in the coils of Kaliya, Balaram said, don't worry, don't worry. There's many things that can be said on this, but don't worry, Krishna's going to be all right. He cannot be disturbed by an ordinary serpent of this world. Don't worry, don't worry. Balaram smiled. And everyone thought, if Balaram is smiling and he loves Krishna so much, then surely everything is going to be all right. So Balaram told Mother Yashoda, worry, Krishna's going to be all right. He'll be back soon, don't worry. So Krishna went down into the water. And before that, Nanda Maharaj had been taken before Varuna. And Varuna, knowing everything, and Prabhupada said that by the grace of Krishna, he was omniscient. Varuna knew everything. So he said, oh, this is Nanda Maharaj. Just by looking at his physiognomy, which is a fancy word that means you can recognize a person's qualities by the different shapes on their faces, bumps and shapes in their faces. So he said, this is Nanda Maharaj. And immediately he became frightened because his servant had taken Krishna's own father. So he took Nanda Maharaj, placed him on his own throne, on a throne to the side. And Nanda Maharaj, all this time, Nanda Maharaj was just, his eyes were closed, and he was thinking, my son Krishna is so beautiful. And my son Krishna, when he plays his flute, it is so wonderful. And my son Krishna, he's so strong. And my son Krishna, and my son Krishna, and my son Krishna, and my son Krishna, he was not in the least bit anxiety. He was just meditating upon Krishna the whole time. He was placed on the throne, and then Varuna went outside the palace, and he was waiting because he knew Krishna would have to come. He would immediately come. So in one sense, he was very happy because he was going to have darshan of Krishna. But on the other side, he was terrified because his servant had done something very improper. So Krishna himself assumed a great angry form because someone, Varuna's servant, had taken his father. And Krishna's nature is that he loves his devotees, what to speak of his Vrijbasis and his family members, but he's Bhakta Vatsalyatma Pajanta Vedanyata. He's always leaning towards his devotees. He loves his devotees. And he's even more than a Kalpavriksha tree, which gives everyone what they want. He even becomes, if someone is an enemy of his devotee, Krishna explains, that he's becoming my enemy. Krishna's relationship with his devotees is what? What word could you think of?
Unequal.
Yes. Who said that? Yes, thank you. Anyone else have a proper word? Yes, that's certainly a word.
Sweet.
Sweet. What other word?
Intimate.
It's intimate. Wonderful. It is unparalleled. There's nothing like it. It's unbreakable. So when Nanda Maharaj was taken, Krishna became so angry and he assumed an angry form. This is described by Srila Jiva Goswami in Gopal Champa. And when Krishna went into the water, he was so angry. And when he approached Varuna's abode, Varuna had come outside to meet him to see if he could cool him down and make Krishna peaceful. He knew what was going to happen. So as soon as Krishna came, he started praising him and said, look, your father is here. Look, and he pointed to the throne where Nanda Maharaj is sitting, thinking, Krishna is so beautiful.
and his peacock feather upon his head when he crawls on the ground and when he walks and he takes out the cows. Look, your father is here. Your father is here. And he began glorifying Krishna. You are the Supreme Lord. You are all-powerful. You are omniscient. You are omnipresent. You are so kind to your devotees. Please, come to your father immediately. Come, I will take you to him. So by this time, Krishna became peaceful. But all this time, the residents of Vrindavan were on the shore. What do you think they were thinking? First Nandaraj went into the water, and then Krishna appears to have drowned in the water. They were in so much. In Bengali, they would say, Anek Chinta. Complete anxiety. They were in complete anxiety. We're not in complete anxiety when we hear this. Sometimes when Maharaj Parikshit is hearing the stories of Krishna's pastimes, like the Kaliya pastime, he's in anxiety just by hearing that Krishna may be in difficulty. He's in anxiety. And when we hear it, because we don't have that, I shouldn't say we, but the depth of relationship isn't strong like that. So we're hearing it as what an interesting story or something like that. But the residents of Vrindavan weren't thinking what an interesting pastime of Krishna is going on. They were in complete anxiety. They felt like they had no life in their body. They were fainting and calling out and crying and keeping each other alive by hearing the pastimes of Krishna. So Varuna took Krishna and he said, here is your father. And Krishna stood in front of Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj, who was fully in meditation on his son, Krishna, he smelled the fragrance of Krishna. And when he smelled the fragrance of Krishna, he knew Krishna was nearby. And he opened up his eyes. And he said, oh, Krishna. And Krishna said to his father, very respectfully and very gently, because it's very important to speak to our parents and elders in a very respectful, and our teachers too, in a respectful and gentle way. Krishna was always so gentle. So he said to his father, my dear father, please now take the lotuses that are your feet and place them one after another on the path that Varuna has made for us, and let us now go home. So Varuna all this time is saying, glorifying Krishna, saying prayers to Krishna, telling of Krishna's glories, and giving Krishna presents, gifts of cloth and jewels, all the wealth that it says that is beneath the ocean that is so deep. So then they left by a special non-watery water wave, and all the residents of Vrindavan had been waiting and watching, and suddenly Nanda Maharaj comes up and Krishna comes up, and they were very, very happy to see Krishna and Nanda Maharaj. Oh, I've talked too long. Are you hungry? Would you like to take prasadam now?
I don't know.
You don't know? Who should I ask if you'd like to take prasadam? Would you like to take prasadam? Okay. We have time for one question. We have time for two questions. You can get one and then... This can be very difficult. Arjuna, Saka, cool. And then you're next. But I'm going to answer them very quickly if I can. Did you like that pastime of Krishna's?
Yeah.
So nice. Krishna's so nice. He's so gentle. Look at his dealings. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Our Radha-Vallabha. Yes.
One this pastime and other pastimes, we see that whenever the residents of Vrindavan are in trouble, they will call out to Krishna. So, and on the other side, we know that they don't see him as God, don't know about his power. So, is it just the love which is making them call out to Krishna? Because they know that he's not powerful, then why do they always call him?
They know he's powerful. But they don't think it's because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that question also comes in the 27th chapter of the starting after they come back. The resident Nanda Maharaj tells all the residents of Vrindavan, I heard Varuna was glorifying Krishna. He tells them the glories of his son. So they think maybe he's not a devata, maybe he's not powerful because of Nanda Maharaj's worship of Lord Narayan, but maybe he's the Supreme Lord, and maybe he's going to give us liberation. What's going to happen to us after? So that's the rest of the chapter, actually, that question. But maybe I'll tell that tomorrow. But to answer your question, Garga Rishi had said, Narayana Samoganai, and he also said, if I can remember, but he said, whenever you're in any difficulty, this is at the name giving ceremony of Krishna. Does anyone know that? Gopa Vrindeshwaru. You know that verse of Gaugacharya?
No.
I do know it, and if I knew one word, I'd be able to get it. But I forgot it. All the things that one becomes proud of, one loses in old age. But Garga Muni had said, whenever it ends with Trishati, whenever the Brijbasis are in difficulty, they should take complete shelter of Krishna. He will protect you. So that was known. So in many, many places, after the two forest fires, always, whenever there is any difficulty, Krishna, 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 Krishna. But their mood is somewhat different. But that's another explanation. But yeah, that's the basic reason that they knew what Gaugacharya said, and they saw Krishna had done so many things when Aristasura entered in to the village of Vrindavan. Krishna protected them, all the cows and everything. They always turned to Krishna, just like all devotees always turn to Krishna. Yeah.
So when Krishna is in trouble, then Mother Yashoda wants to go and protect him in the water.
Yeah. So when does she know the difference to turn to Krishna for protection? Mother Yashoda only thinks about protecting Krishna. Nanda Maharaj sometimes, but for different reasons, calls out to Krishna to protect us. When the forest fire came, they called out to Krishna for protection because they were fearing that they would be separated from Krishna. That's what Nanda Maharaj called out for. I fear that we cannot tolerate yourself being separated from you. So please protect us from that. That's also there. But Mother Yashoda and all the Brijbasis, when during the Kaliya pastime, they were ready to jump into the water to immediately to save Krishna, and Balaram stopped the men and the ladies, stopped Mother Yashoda from coming in by pouring the nectar of Krishna's pastimes in her ear. And then also in this pastime, this particular pastime, Srimati Radharani was there. And when Krishna went into the water, she fainted and was about to die. And what kept her alive was the other gopis kept saying to her, Krishna's right here. What are you worried about? He's right in front of you. Just open your eyes, you'll see him. I kept her alive. And then she opened her eyes and she didn't see Krishna and she fainted again. And they would just tell her, and this is love for Krishna. In this world, it's very hard to even know what love is in this world, because there's some, at least some selfishness there. But in Vrindavan, love is expanded completely to the fullest extent. We can't even glimpse it, practically speaking, of what the purity of what that love is. There's nothing other than love there, and it's to the highest degree, like a mountain of love, like a tsunami of love. And therefore they're always with Krishna and they're always ecstatic. There's not enough time for your question right now, but it was probably a very complicated question. Yes? Okay, you can ask it and then we'll end.
Why is Prithu compared to Indra? If he captured Indra while he was doing the Ashwamedha Yagna, and he was the Lord, Supreme Lord.
So Indra, yeah, he's an Avesha avatar, actually, a person who's empowered by the Lord to rule as king. But he's compared to Indra because Indra is so powerful. Of course, he's more powerful, but he's, because everyone knows Indra. It's so powerful, everyone in this culture. So he's compared to Indra, who is so powerful for that reason. But good question. But Krishna is Govinda. He's even more powerful, of course. I'm not sure I answered your question to your satisfaction. Maybe the best I can do right now. Are you happy? Are you ready to go, though? Yeah, I thought so. Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Master.